Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, sponsored by EarthX, the world's largest environmental experience, and also sponsored by Natural Awakenings magazine. Live your healthiest life on a healthier planet. Now here's your host, Bernice Butler.
Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. We are now in our fifth season, and we remain just as excited as ever to continue to help you explore and understand that unbreakable relationship between your health and the health of the planet. Here we look at the hottest topics related to our environment and its sustainability and how they affect your health and wellness. Here, issues like climate change, plastic pollution, extreme weather events, and others will meet up with everyday impacts like allergies and asthma, digestive issues and gut health, cancers, lung, heart issues, and more. So listen in today for today's show in our series on energy production and consumption. And today we're going to focus in on the future of renewable energy, looking at its challenges and opportunities. And we're going to focus and talk about embracing those challenges and opportunities as we look forward and move to the future of renewable energy on this planet. Now, in the quiet hum of our everyday lives, there's a subtle but yet undeniable shift taking place, one that holds the promise of a cleaner, healthier, and a more sustainable future. We're actually standing at the crossroads of a pivotal era in our human history, where the choices we make today will not only shape the world we pass on to future generations, but it will also significantly shape our own lives in the very near future. The conversation about renewable energy has transcended the realm of scientific and policy debates to become a topic that touches the core of our daily existence. Now, renewable energy, encompassing sources like solar, wind, hydro, and geothermal power, is not just a buzzword that's used by environmentalists, policymakers, and scientists. It is a lifeline for our planet, and more importantly, it's a direct influencer of our health and our well-being. And so our discussion today aims to bridge the gap between the intricate world of renewable energy and the lives we lead, sharing light on the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead for all of us. Our reliance on fossil fuels has fueled the fires of climate change, posing a grave threat to the delicate balance of our ecosystems and our planet. And as ordinary citizens, it's easy to feel disconnected from the magnitude of environmental issues, believing or thinking, or perhaps dreaming, that the responsibility lies solely with policymakers and industry leaders. However, the reality of it all is starkly different. The air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we consume are all intricately linked to the choices we make as consumers and members of the global community. Now, climate change doesn't just manifest itself in distant melting ice caps and in rising sea levels. It seeps into the very fabric of our everyday lives, affecting our health and well-being. Increased air pollution from burning fossil fuels contributes to respiratory issues, and it exacerbates conditions like asthma and allergies. Extreme weather events that are intensified by climate change can disrupt communities and strain our healthcare systems. So the urgency of the situation demands a collective response, prompting us to reconsider the way we generate and consume energy. And amidst the challenges, our beacon of hope is renewable energy. The sun that warms our skin, the wind that blows our hair, and the rivers that flow tirelessly and endlessly, it seems, all hold the key to a sustainable and cleaner future. And the opportunities presented by renewable energy are not distant dreams, but tangible solutions that can transform the landscape of our daily lives. For example, cleaner air and healthier lives by embracing renewable energy means reducing our reliance on fossil fuels, which in turn translates to cleaner air. By shifting to solar and wind power, we can significantly decrease air pollution, leading to a direct improvement in respiratory health. And so imagine breathing in air that invigorates rather than irritates. A simple yet a profound change that renewable energy can bring to our lives and our communities. And then there's energy independence. Renewable sources empower individuals and communities by providing a path to energy independence. Solar panels on rooftops and wind turbines in local areas enable us to generate our own electricity, reducing dependence on centralized energy grids. This not only enhances our resilience in the face of power outages, but it also fosters a sense of community empowerment. And then there's transformation and innovation. The renewable energy sector holds immense potential for industry transformation and innovation as we shift away from fossil fuels. Industries are compelled to adapt and embrace cleaner alternatives, and this transition fosters a culture of innovation, driving research and development in fields such as energy storage, grid optimization, and sustainable materials. And then there are economic opportunities. The transition to renewable energy opens doors to new job opportunities and new industries, from the installation and maintenance of solar panels to the manufacturing of wind turbines. The renewable sector is a source of sustainable employment as well. And so by supporting these industries, we not only contribute to a cleaner environment, but also stimulate economic growth in our own communities. And then there are policy opportunities. Incentivizing renewable energy adoption can happen substantially. Government policies play a pivotal role in steering the trajectory of renewable energy adoption. Incentives, tax credits, and subsidies for renewable projects encourage businesses, as well as individuals, to invest in cleaner alternatives. And these policies not only accelerate the transition, but also signal a commitment to a sustainable future. And we are looking forward to great things from the recent legislation that really puts a lot of dollars toward renewable energy. So the challenges are real, but so are the opportunities. And by embracing renewable energy, we not only safeguard the environment, but we also cultivate a healthier, more resilient lifestyle for ourselves and for generations to come. And the opportunities presented by renewable energy are not distant and they're not abstract. They're woven into the fabric of our daily lives, and again, more so due to the recent legislation. As we navigate the landscape of renewable energy, we should recognize the profound impact, though, of our choices and the effect they have on the world that we live in. It's a journey that goes way beyond the complexities of industries and policies, focusing on the simplicity of everyday decisions. And so by embracing renewable energy, it's not just about securing a sustainable future for the planet. It's also about securing healthier and more vibrant life for each of us. So this is a lot. But here today to help us explore and unpack this, we have with us Pierre Connor. Pierre is the executive director of the Tulane Energy Institute at Tulane University, and he teaches energy markets and economics and policy. Pierre also guides the strategic direction and operations of the Tulane Energy Institute. And prior to joining, Pierre was the president of Capital One Securities, an energy equity boutique investment subsidiary of Capital One Financial Corporation. He was also head of equity sales and research and trading research and analyzing hundreds of energy companies. And prior to this, Pierre was an engineer managing for Exxon's domestic drilling operation, and he also worked on the ExxonMobil merger. So he's got a broad expertise in energy management and also the economics and the finance of it all. Welcome, Pierre. Did I get all of that right?
Yes, thank you very much, Bernice. Appreciate it. And thank you for having me today.
And thank you for taking the opportunity to join us. So I want to go ahead, and we only have a couple of minutes to go before break, so I'm going to lob you a softball here, if you don't mind.
Sure. And,
but what I wanted to start with you is to really talk about why ordinary people in their everyday lives should care about the future of renewable energy and how it impacts their daily lives.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, it's important to understand that energy is ubiquitous and it involves really every aspect of your daily life. So economically, you know, a large percentage of your income is related to your primary energy use, for one. And, you know, understanding the energy systems are important because people elect politicians and politicians enact policies, and those policies impact their energy sources or their consumption and how they get their energy. You know, and then there's a really a a really sophisticated connection between energy, food, and water. And all of these things are really obviously important to our quality of life. So we should really understand how this transition is occurring and maybe how we can get involved in it.
Indeed. Thank you for that. And I want to unpack a little bit later on after the break when you said that connection between energy, food, and water. Having done this show for a while, I hear that often, but I just think it's really important that people understand that. And that's the whole purpose of Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, is to educate and inform so they understand. And we know that when they understand, to care about this is not an option, but they see it as the existential necessity that it is. So thank you. We're going to go ahead and go to break now, and we'll be right back on the other side with Pierre Connor coming to us out of Mardi Gras City, and he's going to make us much smarter. Thank you. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, natural grocers, Central Markets, Sunflower Shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care. Practicing dentistry for over 40 years, non-mercury with a holistic approach looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today, to our show in our series on energy production and consumption. And today we're unpacking the future of renewable energy, looking at the challenges and the opportunities. And we are back with Pierre Connor, again out of Mardi Gras City, and he really is making us smarter. Now, Pierre, before the break, you had mentioned the interconnectedness of energy, food, and water. Can you go into that just a little bit more in terms of connecting a few dots for our listeners so they really grasp the importance of it? Because I don't think that if we went down the street and held a mic to people's mouth and asked them, what do you know about this? Or do you believe there's an interconnection? They probably just would flip you off.
Right. No, that's a great point. And, of course, there's, primary energy production for the quality of life and transportation uses and heating and cooling in a residential situation or in our commercial facilities as well. But, there's a large component of energy which it does tie to this concept of implications to our food sources. Of course, the types of energy in terms of the emissions that are produced as well. But, for instance, I've heard it quipped that agriculture is the process of turning hydrocarbons into food. So, we spend a large amount of energy in the cultivation of food sources for the world. One thing to consider is that 50% of the world's food production comes from the use of synthetic fertilizers. So fertilizers produced with a large component of natural gas that is converted into ammonia and then ultimately into synthetic fertilizers. And it's obviously increased quality of life and access to food and reduced hunger around the world. That's not even considering the fact that the energy is used to process, to distribute, and to collect these food resources. So there's a tremendous connection there. Now, obviously, the water connection as well. For example, there's a lot of water processing done for food consumption, and then there's an interconnectedness with things like biofuels. We've heard a lot about that and the transition to, say, ethanol. And we know that that's a large consumer of water. So, you know, we just need to be thoughtful about the entire circle of energy. And it's, you know, how big do you draw the box, I like to say, when you think about it.
Indeed. And it reminds me that another way perhaps that people might be able to grasp this thought, too, is if you take away a lot of the energy, or you take away energy from the food production process, then we would kind of go back to what my daughter calls the olden days. She means when I was young, but I mean horse and buggy. And if we were back there when we didn't have all the energy application to that agriculture process that we have now, and if we were doing that now, then what we'd be suffering from is inadequate food, because I think
that
of this energy put into it has caused us to significantly increase food production so that indeed we could fuel and feed our modern world.
Right. And there's so many components of the use of energy that improve our quality of life, obviously, right? And it's not, you know, obviously access to, you know, sustainable and food, but also, you know, healthcare as well, access to healthcare and medicines. And you know, again, you know, we benefit from access to energy on a regular basis in this country, and other countries are developing countries in particular, needing to get reliable energy sources. So, you know, we'll see increased quality of life as we increase the energy availability to the world's population.
And there's one point that's kind of, it's very exciting to me. And when we look at increasing energy to the world's population, and the exciting thing is that we have an opportunity to do it right.
Well, that's a great point, Bernice. And in your opening, you mentioned that we're at a pivotal time, and we are. And I you know, I can't overemphasize how important it is that we're all knowledgeable about the primary energy sources, the way we move energy around the world, and of course, how important it is that we think about how we consume energy. So this is a very important time as we make the transition to lower carbon sources of energy production, and that we, you know, are knowledgeable about the policies that are implemented, and are they right? You know, and I mentioned earlier that my generation, my parents were in try to driving me to have a vision and have a plan, and they use the old Yogi Berra quote of if you don't know where you're going, you'll end up somewhere else. And you know what I see today is I teach, you know, 19 to 22 year olds, and they have a vision. They know what the world needs to look like, and in a prosperous world, we have a transition to low to zero carbon. But what I tell them is, unless you know where we are today and you understand the pitfalls and the hurdles to make that transition, you can't chart the path to where you want to be. So education of this energy transition is so important right now. And the generation, you know, you mentioned your daughter, and that's the group that will be making these decisions for the next several generations to come.
Now, I want to talk about where we are some more, as you mentioned. Where are we in terms of the current percentages of renewable energy in use in both the U.S. and then globally, if you have some estimates?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So I think it does surprise people. A couple of interesting little factoids. You know, a third of the energy produced and consumed in this country is coming from petroleum products right now, a little over a third, actually. And, you know, 90%+ of transportation today comes from a liquid petroleum, obviously gasoline and diesel and jet fuel. So while we might be influenced by the number of EV ads that we see at the Super Bowl, we're really only on a small percentage at the moment. The other thing is that, you know, nearly a third of the energy produced and consumed in this country comes from natural gas. And, you know, That's where does it go? Well, a third of that third is going into the production of electricity. Also, of course, there's a large component of natural gas use in industrial processes that keep our country humming and producing goods that are consumed here and elsewhere. On the coal side, and I'll get to your renewables, Bernice, which you're most interested in, you know, we are still at about 10%. of the energy produced in this country comes from coal sources, most of that going into electricity generation at the moment. And then, you know, where we are, solar power, which you mentioned at the outset, is interesting and gets a lot of discussion. But I think people would be surprised to learn that really less than 2% of the energy that we produce and consume in the country comes from solar power at the moment. Wind is maybe almost 4%. Hydropower, a little over 2%. So we are at a small, you know, percentage, if you will, on a relative basis to the hydrocarbons currently. You know, that's what we need to talk about, the transition. And that's where, you know, I think we'll get into this. But a number of sources would predict there's a large amount of capital required. Now, various outlooks, the EIA and others predict that wind and solar will be the fastest growing sources of energy production in the country, for sure, and frankly, around the world, offshore wind being one of the largest growth rates expected around the world, you know, beginning to outpace coal. But a significant amount of capital will be required to grow those percentages and replace predominantly fossil fuels.
I didn't realize it was that minuscule, quite frankly. And maybe it's, you know, because I do this work, I know about it and I talk about it a lot, but had no, I just really thought it was more. But along that line, let's talk about, I guess, the users, because that lets us know maybe where the leverage is in terms of, when I say users, is it the consumer, what we as individuals are using it for electricity, what we as individuals are using for our transportation? Is it industry? What are the biggest users or consumers of all that fossil fuel?
That's a great point, because you know, there are many challenges associated with this transition, which we need to implement, of course, including the influx of the capital required to make the investments. But you know, there's a component of the energy transition which comes down to, you know, consumer choice. And you know, there's you've probably seen some of these numbers, but there's again, this generation of young people will ultimately be the consumers of the future. You know, are aware of what you know, what is the makeup of the products and the services that they're consuming in terms of say the carbon footprint. And I think the point is there will be an awareness, and in these future outlooks, there's going to be a trade-off of economics and you know, carbon content. You know, some analysis would indicate that people would say they want to buy you know, low carbon content products and or services, but yet might only be willing to pay a small premium to do so. So let's take a look at where primary energy is consumed, not including our aforementioned, you know, food consumption.
Before you start that, because that's very important, let's put a pin in that. We're going to look at the primary sources of consumption, but we need to go to break. So let's go ahead and do that. And after the break, you'll tell us all about that, because I think that's very important. Thank you so much. We'll be right back on the other side with Pierre Connor with Tulane University. Thank you. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, to our show in our series on energy production and consumption. And today we're focusing in on embracing the future of renewable energy, looking at its challenges and opportunities. And we are back with Pierre Connor at Tulane University, who's also has worked in engineering for ExxonMobil. So he's got this broad swath of expertise and he's really making us smarter. So again, thank you for being able to join us today, Pierre. I want to go back. Right before the break, you were about to tell us about who the consumers are, kind of the percentage of consumption of energy by the various sectors, because that will help us understand maybe where the leverage needs to be.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point. So Again, you know, I think about the United States in particular, where really a little more than a quarter of primary energy produced is consumed in transportation. Now, some states are much higher. Some states are more like, you know, as much as half of the energy consumed goes into transportation. But overall, nearly a quarter of the energy that we go to the effort to produce goes through transportation. Then also about a quarter goes through industrial activity, as I mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. So manufacturing and industrial processes, et cetera. So that obviously, again, producing, you know, goods and products for consumers ultimately. And then the remaining half is split between, so residential, you and I's personal homes and apartment complexes, et cetera, and a commercial. So here we are at Tulane University, and the building here, or the office buildings that you're in, or the you know, the shopping malls, et cetera. So that's commercial, so a little more than 10%, residential about 12%. So where is the leverage? Now, here's another concept I think is important for listeners to think about when we talk about energy consumption and obviously making a transition. And that is that people would be surprised to know that all the effort we go to produce energy in this country, whether it's to produce fossil fuels or produce nuclear power, hydro, or the renewable sources, nearly two-thirds of all this energy in terms of the BTU basis, which is a measure of energy, is wasted. It doesn't go to its primary use. And I think that's surprising to people. And it has to do with the inefficiency of the systems. And, you know, unfortunately, transportation, as I mentioned earlier before the break, was, you know, 90% plus of transportation from an energy use is fueled by fossil fuels, by petroleum in particular. But transportation is not that efficient. You know, a lot of that goes up in incomplete combustion or heat or waste or braking, et cetera. So as it relates to individual choices, you know, being efficient and whether that's in a residential use, for example, whether it's in transportation and in consumer choices. And we'll see a lot of this will happen in this energy transition. And I'd love to get to that in a minute. But one of the challenges around, frankly, two large growing components of renewable energy, wind and solar, are their intermittency. Lots and lots talked about, right? You know, do you want to charge your cell phone only when the wind is blowing? Do you want to go to work only when the sun is shining? So we may have, you know, be thoughtful about how much investment is made in storage and potentially be thoughtful about, you know, even timing could creep into these. It could be a cost impact.
Indeed, those are some of the challenges. But I want to go back and put a fine point, because that was a surprise to me that two-thirds of all the energy produced is wasted. And I have heard that dropped once or twice, but not elaborated on as you have in our conversations on energy use and production. Because it makes me makes me realize that almost equally with the conversation of transitioning to renewable energy needs to be conversation and admonition about efficient use of the energy that we are producing. I knew that I did not know this, and I would think that others would perhaps be sensitized by how much energy is wasted. And we're not just talking about turning off the lights in our house, even though that's significant too.
No, you're right. And it has to do, I think, you know, we'll talk about a lot of new technologies coming to the front, which will be more efficient. You know, some of that is, frankly, in the conversion of the type of energy. Every time we convert from, say, you know, a hydrocarbon into something electricity, just the nature of the technologies that are out there currently, we lose, you know, some energy. Now, we're seeing progress. In terms of, you know, the thermal plants in particular become more efficient. There's been a proliferation of power generation from natural gas, so replacing this coal-fired generation. Those plants are more efficient. And obviously, you know, natural gas is lower carbon emission per unit of energy than coal. So there's an efficiency in the production of electricity that is making its way through. And then you're right, it's more than just being thoughtful and around consumption. Because one of the, I'll bring a new concept out there, Bernice, and that is a 100-year-old plus economic theory by an English economist, Jevons. And it's this interesting paradox. It's called the Jevons paradox. And that is that as you make things more efficient, you might actually increase the demand for the primary input. Now, that nothing more example that's more telling than, for instance, the proliferation of central air conditioning in the U.S. South, right? Once we created a technology to cool an entire house, you know, obviously with progress, we installed quite a bit more air conditioning units, and now we're seeing summertime electricity peaks. So efficiency is important, but I would say a lot of that could have impact through the industrial side or through electricity generation. As mentioned, obviously, efficiency in transportation as well.
That brings to mind that maybe if we get EVs, electric vehicles, much more efficient, they'll be adopted more. That's what that policy says.
No, EVs are a great study in the energy transition, right? So, and it also involves economics. It involves, frankly, parity and equity in this transition, too. I think that's not to be lost. There's no doubt that one of the challenges is the amount of capital that's going to be required, right? So one analysis, Bloomberg New Energy Finance, would say to get to net zero by 2050, we're talking about nearly $200 trillion, right? And for context, let's say the gross domestic product of the entire planet is $90 trillion a year. And that's everything, not just energy. And so somebody's going to have to pay for that. So now tie it back to EVs. Currently EVs are more expensive. Is there a trend to, reduce the cost? So are we going to be able to get electrification of transportation into the system in an equitable way so that people that rely on transportation to get to work, potentially your lower income segments, are not burdened with having forced to be, pay up for electrification of their transportation system. So I think that's a component of the transportation transition we need to be thoughtful about.
And I want to go back to something else you said, too, when you were kind of giving us those percentages of the consumption. You said 25% was transportation, approximately 25% industrial activities. Then approximately 50% is kind of residential and commercial power. I didn't realize that either. And that comes down to our individuals and our choices and a lot of the things that we do. And so I think it is important, again, that we come back with that. I know we say that all the time on the show, that individual choices matter, but there tends to be a sense out there among a lot of the public is that just, me turning off these little lights for a few hours is just not going to make a dent. And so I think that we have a lot of work, certainly, with that. We're going to need to go to break here in just a couple of minutes. But before we do that, Pierre, you can start us off kind of telling us what you feel are the most promising advancements in renewable energy today.
Yes. And, there are lots of efforts underway, right? It's a pretty important, and there's a lot of incentives to make the transition. And I'm a part of a National Science Foundation grant, NSF grant, for this region, state of Louisiana, called FUEL. And there are lots of opportunities with workforce development, new technologies, and efforts to decarbonize industrial processes, too.
Yeah, because that's going to go a long way, too, I think, in terms of the industrial processes. While this 50% is used by residential and commercial, industrial processes they seem to have a lot of leverage because you're dealing with bigger chunks.
That's right. In some ways, maybe easier to address because they are, for instance, a single point source discharge from CO2. So if we get the technology associated with either reducing, decarbonizing, and, you know, this is a topic, but I believe that, frankly, you know, capturing and sequestering, those things can make big strides.
Thank you so much, Pierre. We're going to go ahead and go to break right now, and we'll be back on the other side with Pierre Connor with Tulane University, and he is making us much smarter. Thank you, Pierre. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, The Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, natural grocers, central markets, sunflower shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 40 years with a holistic approach, non-mercury, looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today, to our series on energy production and consumption. And today we're focusing in on embracing the future of renewable energy, looking at the challenges and opportunities which we must get to. And today with us, who's making us much, much smarter, is Pierre Connor with Tulane University. He's executive director of the Tulane Energy Institute, and he teaches energy markets and economics and policy. And again, thank you so much for making time to be with us today, Pierre. And I really appreciate, and I can tell that you talk to students all the time, because you're really, I feel like, putting this in a way that ordinary people in everyday lives can understand and appreciate. So thank you so much.
Glad to be here.
Okay. So this is our last segment. So I do want to move more into the financial and economic impact that is anticipated for the transition for renewable energy. And one of the things I want to start with here, and then we can go on to some other things that you study and deal with every day, what potential disruptions or changes, or maybe other challenges, should individuals be prepared for as we move toward this more renewable energy-centric landscape as we enter and move toward the transition?
Sure. Well, you know, Bernice, the things that we need to be thoughtful about, we spoke of earlier around the consumption side of it, you know, and efficiencies and appropriate use and of energy that we go to all this effort to make and move around the country. But one thing, a couple of things we need to be prepared for and be thoughtful about is, you know, one is the cost. So we mentioned this. It is a significant amount of capital that's going to be required, and it's going to be debated who pays for it and where it goes into the system. And there's some really good work done by an investment banking firm called Lazard, and it's called the Levelized Cost of Energy. And it is a way to apples-to-apples compare different sources of energy, in this case electricity primarily, and their costs, and what are the drivers in the costs. You know, so obviously, you know, high capital cost energy production will be impacted by, say, you know, interest rates, for example. But I think that as a consumer, you know, we might be thoughtful about what policies force transitions maybe that aren't ready or that aren't appropriate. So it's great to see this transition, which is going to occur through a combination of the markets, the economics that are going to influence what type of investments are made, you know, where this capital is deployed, the policies that are put in place. And, you know, some of the challenges that we talk about and that we try to unfortunately, you know, some bad policies that have been implemented that we want to be aware of and try to be considerate of the big picture when we implement things that don't turn out quite right. So, you know, as an example, we, you know, saw that in places in California, they voted to shut down nuclear power generation before they had enough renewable power capacity in the systems. That turned into rolling blackouts, and people ended up buying, you know, home generators. So that wasn't very equitable in, you know, in terms of the only wealthy people were able to have electricity. So we need to be individually, you know, aware of potentially the costs associated, you know, with this transition. And what are the policies? You know, we've seen changes in rooftop solar policies, how that impacts individuals and the entire grid system, for example. So there's definitely a lot of, you know, it's not going to just happen on its own. And when we turn the light switch on, it's going to be renewable power versus not renewable. We need to be knowledgeable of these systems and be sure that the people that we elect that are making policies are knowledgeable too.
Indeed. And I think we as ordinary citizens have to gain more knowledge so that we can make our voices, our desires known. But back to what you just mentioned, too, about transitioning when we're not ready, when not appropriate. That is a really big point, because guess what gets blamed when it's not right? That bad old renewable energy. And it just takes
sure,
us back.
I mean, yeah. And then, you know, there's always a root cause to everything. But obviously, it isn't understanding all the interconnectedness so we know how complicated it might be. So, you know, winter power outages, for example, a combination of a number of things. And, you know, when we transition to, say, renewable, let's talk about that specifically, mm-hmm. Bernice. That's the topic you're most interested in right now. So one of the things we have to do is when we do have, you know, wind and solar, I mentioned there's a disconnect between our desire to use energy whenever and wherever we want. We don't want to be told that you really shouldn't wash your dishes at 5 o'clock when you get home. But yet we might be thoughtful about, particularly in places that would implement time of use rates because of the intermittency associated with these renewable sources. And that's a big change we have to get used to, right? So a coal plant produces electricity, you just keep shoveling it in, and its utilization rate's in the high 90s. It runs all the time. Maybe they do a shutdown once in a while for maintenance, but you know, there's a reason why coal was a primary energy source for electricity generation, in addition to, you know, obviously, we had a lot of it, but, you know, it's easy and it's consistent and makes for base load power. Base load power is the concept of it's there all the time, it's available when we want it, and we don't have to make choices associated when we use it. Now, what we'll have to do is implement additional, a term that's out there, it's called firming costs. So when we bring electricity from renewable sources of wind and solar, which we don't have control over when they're being generated, we have to add the cost to, quote, firm that power. That is to make it on an apples to apples with, say, a nuclear plant or a gas-fired generation or a coal-fired generation.
Is that not about storage and batteries and things?
It is. Now, those things don't, they're not free.
Right.
And so they add to the cost. So firming is exactly that. It's battery storage or, I mean, there's other sorts of energy storage, the technologies out there which are interesting and can be explored, frankly, mechanical storage methods and, you know, pump storage and another ways that we can shift the time of use of our energy. You know, again, coal and petroleum products can sit there until we're ready to use them, and it's created a tremendous quality of life for all of us.
Indeed. But,
so,
Pierre, we've known for a long time, and we've known, and you all, experts, researchers, scientists, have known for a long time that we are going to need to have to store or figure out a way to store wind and solar. Where are we in terms of making that happen and dealing with that issue?
Well, we're seeing that some policies have been implemented that have created some tax incentives around storage, battery storage, for example. But that's short-term storage, we're going to call that, Bernice. Mm-hmm. Now, also, there's some incentives around hydrogen. So we have a new topic here, but hydrogen, remember, is not a primary energy source, but is a potential storage vehicle.
Okay.
And where we are on hydrogen is just at the beginning. There's a significant amount of technology, infrastructure that will be built and that will be implemented that hydrogen can be used as a long-term energy storage. The point being is when the wind is blowing at 2 a.m. and we're not, you know, we don't have all of our industrial running and we don't have all the commercial running, potentially we produce green hydrogen. And then that can be stored potentially underground, for example, and distributed for use at a later time. So that one is early on, but all accounts and research would indicate quite promising to be a large market.
Indeed, that's exciting. And we just have about three more minutes to go in the show. I'm going to ask you one thing, and then I'm going to let you tell us what concerns you most. And that is, though, what I want to know, talk about a little bit here, is how does this transition, though, to renewable energy impact a lot of U.S. economies that currently derive a great deal of revenue from oil and gas industries, perhaps like your own?
Like Louisiana,
yeah.
Or Texas, for
yeah,
that matter.
Exactly.
Right. No. Yeah. PwC would estimate that 28% of the GDP of the state of Louisiana comes from traditional hydrocarbon production and processing. We do a lot of hydrocarbon processing here, for example, in this state. So if we see a reduction or policies that reduce the demand for or the ability to use or carbon taxes, that would obviously have a negative impact on the employment associated with those sectors. What we have to be aware of, and for through efforts like FUEL, Future Use of Energy in Louisiana, the NSF grant that I alluded to, is to take advantage of the infrastructure that we have, the expertise that we've built up, and the location that we're blessed to have inherited, and get in front of this energy transition. So a little anecdote, the first well drilled out of sight of land was drilled offshore Louisiana in 1947. Today, more than a quarter of the world's oil production comes from offshore operations. So where was the expertise originated around offshore oil and gas production? The state of Louisiana. And now, I think when an effort is underway that we see a dramatic growth in offshore wind. Offshore wind, Louisiana and Texas and others that have been involved in oil and gas, they want to be involved in transitioning the workforce.
That's what's really cool about it is like, you know, when I was in graduate school, they always told us this anecdote about why the railroads went out of business because they didn't realize they were in the transportation business. And that has to be applicable to the oil and gas industry. They're in the energy. It doesn't have to be tied to oil and gas for sure. So we just have a minute to go. So I want you to talk to us about what you think is probably most important for folks to know or consider as it relates to this renewable energy transition.
Well, I back where I started, I think what's most important for people to know and think about is how complicated and interconnected these systems are, whether they're energy production, energy transmission and movement and pipelines and power lines, or whether it's energy consumption. And I just encourage people to read, study, and get good balance view, to be honest. Let's make sure we understand what all the various systems are, that the economics are of this this transition. And I would point to a great data source is the Energy Information Agency of the Department of Energy as a place to start with all of the primary concepts and, again, at least where energy comes from and how it's used.
Indeed.
Educate yourself.
Exactly. And that's what Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio attempts to do, and realize that they have a part, too, in terms of not just their own usage, but how they interact with our decision makers, as well as the industries and the products and services that we buy. Thank you so much, Pierre. We really appreciate you helping us unpack this, and you have definitely made us smarter. We have been, again, with Pierre Connor, Executive Director of the Tulane Energy Institute, and he has really made us smarter today. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for listening in today to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. The conversation starts here, but our goal is for it to continue in your homes, in your social circles, in your workplaces, at the water cooler, and even in the grocery checkout line, so that we can all work together to realize that healthy living is simply not possible without a healthy planet. Our culture is a result of a trillion tiny acts taken by billions of people every day like yourselves. And each of those tiny acts can seem insignificant, but all of them add up, one way or the other, to the change that we each live through. This is your host, Bernice Butler. Thank you for listening in today, and join us again next week for more on energy production and consumption, and listen to any of our past shows on podcast wherever you get yours. Thank you.